Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys again for the Gig Rundown. I think that's the name we landed on. I'm joined by my delightful and dashing co-hosts, friends and amigos, Perry Bean, John Bollinger. How you guys doing?
Great.
Couldn't be better.
All right, let's dive right into it. John, you were out of the country for about a week. How'd that go?
Oh, it's great. Great. I was in Mexico with my father. He's been going to the same place since 1978.
He has a place there, right?
Yeah, in 1978, my father, when I was in eighth grade, we went down there and he and some buddies bought a condo for, I think, like $4,000 each. They put in the money and he's been going there every year.
So an actual property ownership, not a timeshare nightmare.
Well, but the thing is, you can't officially own, an American can't really own land on the beach in Mexico. It's a 100-year lease.
Okay.
But he's not too worried about that.
Yeah, right? So what do you do with your father, who's of the age of, well, how old is your dad?
He is almost 88.
Okay, yeah. So what does... What do you do with your father that's 88?
You know, we hang out, we go on the beach, we do a little yoga, play a lot of gin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hey, out of curiosity, is your dad a guitarist?
No, he is not. Although, my very first guitar, my mother bought one for him, but he had six kids and a job.
And plenty of time to play it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he never had a chance to play it. So, so my mom wanted him to play, ended up making me play. So, so thanks, Mom.
Nice. Well, as the gig rundown indicates, we kind of talk about our job and then things loosely associated, as vacations do, happen on our jobs from time to time. Perry and I got to do, and then Jared behind camera got to do the Tool and Pantera rig rundowns that
are
out rolling out there in the world right now. Those were fun for different reasons, but also similar reasons for me. Big bands in my youth, as I still listen to them to this day. But it was cool. Tool, Justin really got on the bass and kind of demonstrated everything he does with it, everything he does with his rig. He was very thorough. His tech, Pete Lewis, was great on camera. That was a fun day.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Speaking of Pete and Justin, if I ever win the lottery, I'm just gonna hire English guys just to talk to me. Yeah. I love it. Like, I could listen to them just tell me bedtime stories because they're so charming and like professional, but also like fun and I don't know, I just love their accent.
What is it? Isn't it you say something along the line, like we're speaking the same language or?
Sometimes I feel like, like with Scottish guys, we're both speaking English, but we are definitely separated by a common language, you know, from time
that's
to time.
It's kind of like when you did that interview with Stone King. Like you guys are both technically speaking English, but that was, you guys were hitting different wavelengths.
Yeah, we might have ought to put some captions on that one.
But that was a fun one, the Tool one. If you haven't checked that out, it's worth checking out, especially if you're a fan of Tool and Justin Chancellor. And the Pantera one that just went up this week was a big one for us. We've been chasing that one for a while as well, and we got Rex and Zach involved. And off camera, but still involved, was Grady, who was Dimebag's tech, and he told us some stuff. Which was cool about Zach's rig, if you hadn't seen it because you just were out of the country, is that he incorporated some of Dime's key effects. Like the doubler flanger from MXR.
Such a cool homage.
The Aphex big bottom thing that was a part of his thing. And then the Rocktron silencer, that was a big part of his sound. So that came in a rack along with Grady and his expertise of the rig. So that was cool that, you know, although he didn't use any Dime's guitars, any of his amps, because he's obviously got the wild audio stuff going. Yeah. He did bring a little bit of Dime stash.
Oh, yeah. And what a loving homage to... I imagine they had to know each other back in the day, right?
Oh, they did. Oh, they were big buddies.
Yeah, they were real close.
Together.
Yeah.
And that's when Zach Wild was a little more wild. They got into it.
I'm sure they had some tales.
Yeah.
Those are both great rig rundowns, not only for myself, Perry, of that ilk, of the heavy music genres, but also just for the company to get those two big names in the boat. So do yourself a favor and check those out.
And that was, I remember years ago, you had mentioned that was your white whale you were chasing.
The dream.
We've had those conversations off camera, but like, what rig rundown would you wish could happen, even dead or alive? And mine was always Dimebag, not only because I have a tattoo of him on my leg, love Pantera, but watching those Vulgar videos was like hanging out with buddies growing up.
Yeah.
Kind of taught me how to party or how not to party. You know, their music was great to make bad decisions to.
You know, if you grew up like us and into metal, you probably had a friend who had an older brother that was kind of a loser and like smoked a lot of pot and had access to those videos. But that was like so almost like viral before the internet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like as soon as I heard about those, it's like, oh shit, we got to go to Steve's house and watch his old brother's VHSs of this because it's crazy.
Well, that was kind of like our version of mixtapes in the 90s was like CKY was another thing where I learned about a lot of music for those Bam Margera and skateboard videos was like watching those things.
Soundtracks to skate videos for
sure. Yeah, it was like that's how I learned a lot about music, and Vulgar Videos was a way that, you know, back then even we were still on stage and that was kind of how you knew your rock stars, maybe Hit Parader, but we don't have their interviews that we had. We don't have the YouTube channels we had. And so we kind of mystified them.
Right.
And like being able to see them in Vulgar Videos hanging out backstage was like, they're like, they came, it sadly made, for me as a loser, like they were my friends.
Yeah, it almost like you got to see the real them.
Yeah.
You know?
So all that to say was, I just bet he would have been a hoot on camera, let alone like him talking about his gear or whatever. I guarantee a Dimebag would have been a character. It would have been so fun to try to wrangle him and just let the tape fly and see what happens. So that was always my dream one in that regard. Was like, I knew it would be a hell of a good time.
Sure. Before we go on to another topic, I just want to let the audience know, like, if you had told Chris or I when we were, you know, 12 years old that as adults we would be getting to interview bands like this, A, never would have believed you.
Yeah.
But, like, we are so grateful for you guys watching and being a part of this with us and, you know, seeing behind the curtain a little bit with us because, you know, I feel like it's where we all kind of meet, you know?
Right.
It doesn't necessarily even have to be a specific band, but if you're really a music fan or, you know, a musician.
But getting back into the lane of gear, you guys put up two demos recently. You did the PV Classic 20 and the Bell Ray. Tell me about your experiences with those amps.
Okay, Classic 20 I have a long history with. There was a music store in my hometown, Hanson Music, which is still there. My buddies Bob and Art run it. And they were a PV dealer. And I think your tone, at least when I was a kid, is kind of contingent on geography.
Yeah,
sure.
You sound like what you can get. And back in Montana then, you could get PVs. And so I really love that tone. I lean more towards the clean. I don't really, you know, I mean, I am a different generation. And, you know, even if you listen to the early Van Halen stuff, it's not that dirty. We just didn't get that dirty and it really wasn't a thing. And that PV tone to me really, it's kind of my wheelhouse. When I did several seasons of a TV show, Nashville Star for NBC, and I was using two PV Classic 20s, just cranked up and sounded great. And I think their new model is better than ever. I wish it was still made in Mississippi. That's just me, but I get it. The world is what it is.
It's tough to hit that price point. I think it's $900, not $99.
Yeah, exactly. It's an impossibility, and everything is so crazy expensive. I love that there's an affordable. I like the fact that a kid mowing lawns can buy an amp you can gig with.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say that back in the Nashville when you moved to town that a lot of the clubs downtown were backlined by PV stuff?
No. But I would carry mine, and the power is so terrible downtown that I blew up two of them downtown. Because it's funny, I shot a TV show once for the NFL draft.
Okay.
And they shot it at Tootsie's. And I brought down my attenuator, and it told me what was coming out of the walls, and it was coming out of the walls like 130.
Wow.
So I'm like, that explains it.
Yeah, that'll do it.
That explains why it fried this
amp. That brown box you have.
Yeah, the brown box totally puts it in the sweet spot. But that, so nothing against PV, it fried because of
that's high voltage as AC/DC.
Scary wiring. Yeah, scary wiring.
What were you going to say?
I was gonna, you know, believe it or not, there was a time where if you went to Broadway, you'd see a lot more PVs than you would expect. You know what I mean? It's like, I think Tootsie's might have had a deal with them at one point, or Robert's Western World. I think PV was kind of supplying them.
Yeah, and they're still around. However, it's gone a lot more. There's so many solid state, very light alternatives
now. Right. Yeah, I think it's more of a player's choice now than it might have been back in the day. But yeah, for sure.
I kind of, and you know, this is where we can open up to the viewers, is that PV, especially back in its heyday in the 90s and early 2000s, I would say it was the biggest amp company that catered to almost all genres. Because think about it. The 5150 is a huge metal
all the subgenre metal amp, but then it also has the stuff with the Kleenex.
Yeah.
Country guys.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And
whereas Marshall did its thing from like classic rock to hard rock to metal, but like PV kind of you could do it all, whether it was the 5150 or the classic stuff.
Right. And pedal steel amps, bass amps, PAs. I mean, that's the thing. In my hometown, your band went to the local music store, like Music Villa in Bozeman or Hanson's in Billings, and you could outfit your whole band right there. And you didn't mail order stuff back then.
Right.
There was no Amazon or any of that stuff.
So what did you think of the Bell Ray? That kind of had like three amps in one, right?
I thought that was so impressive because this is the car amplifier.
Yeah.
And as I say, I lean more towards clean sounds, but to my ear, I found every one of those settings a very distinct, clearly European sound.
Yeah, Vox, High Watt, and Marshall.
Yeah, every one of them had a little bit of a grit and growl to it. Even on their clean settings, they had a little warm fuzzy that I thought it was beautiful.
I also thought it was pretty smart of Carr to take this approach because with modeling becoming so close and, you know, modelers obviously offer a player a multitude of sounds and amps and stuff. You know, if you're not into that and you are playing an analog amp, to have a couple of options is not a bad call. So I think, you know, hats off to Carr for making an amp with such distinct tonal possibilities, I think.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and they react, they all reacted differently. Huh. You know, and I think that's the thing that modeling never quite gets. You get the sound, but you don't necessarily get the performance because it's not reacting the same way as far as natural compression and this kind of feedback and all these things that affect you on as a performer. It's not audio, it's more about what it brings out of you, I think.
I can see that for sure.
Well, moving along on our list is that something for me and Perry to ponder, and then I'll open it up to the bigger thing. Is like, I feel like there's so many reunions happening. This one specifically being the Slayer. They were gone for just 5 years. I thought, you know, we saw them on their farewell tour in Nashville here. So apparently they're coming back this year. A, is there a demand for them? I don't know. And then B, with all the reunions happening, is it losing its kind of luster of having a band come out of the, you know, the dust off the gear and come out?
I'm of two minds about this because I love Slayer.
Yeah.
So more Slayer is obviously good.
Right.
But also you do see, especially like post-pandemic, a lot of bands that were like playing farewell tours and kind of gussing it up, making a lot of money because it was their last tour.
Yeah.
And then just a couple years later coming back. And it's not just Slayer. I've seen it, you know, happen quite a bit lately.
So many bands.
Yeah. And it's like, if you're going to take a hiatus, just say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think you necessarily have to be like, cash grab us. You know what I mean? Because if for fans, we're gonna spend the money anyway. You know what I mean?
What about you? Do you have any thoughts on the whole reunion fad?
Well, you know what makes bands play? You know, established bands, money.
Money. Yeah.
And you know, you wave enough money in front of enough people. You know, that's the thing about this gig. You are your own retirement. You know, as long as. The reason they say players only love you when they're playing is the only way you're getting paid is if you're playing. And if you weren't the songwriter, if you're in a band, you didn't write the songs.
Yeah.
If you're not gigging, you're not earning.
Right.
So even though you might be out with guys that you met when you were a child and you're very different by now and you're grown men and you just can't stand those rednecks you're working with.
Yeah.
You know, eventually you need some dough and you think, not so bad.
Got to put dinner on the table,
No, I don't think it's as calculated. Maybe it is in some cases. But I bet they get a phone call that is too hard to turn down.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, whether it's a promoter or a manager gets an offer from a festival looking for a big splash banner name to include on their festival 3-day weekend.
I think you just hit the nail on the head because, you know, years ago, there might be a couple big festivals.
Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo.
And Wacken Open Air Festival. Now there are a ton of festivals. Like, not only, you know, I mentioned it's not only Slayer. You know, I see, like, Have Heart doing a reunion. I see Bane playing reunion shows. Modern Life is War is coming out of retirement. And it's like,
I mean, that's Furnace Fest.
I'm so excited for that, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's probably driven by festival promoters with a huge chunk of change.
Trying to get somebody.
We want something crazy.
That's gonna sell tickets.
So let's do you know, some wild ass reunion stuff.
This is one that we joke about in a group text that we're all
Misfits.
In.
Misfits.
Yeah, the Misfits, yeah. Which we went out to the first one. We loved it. A group of my buddies were all, you know, Perry included. I've gone to several of them, and
we
it's
dropped
like,
some cash on that.
And now we're like, we see him keep popping up. We're like, we joke about it, like, yeah, fuck that shit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could sell a guitar and go again because I will because I love
we
the Misfits.
We just did that with NoFX last year. We went to see NoFX in Florida, and they're still doing their never-ending tour.
Yeah, their final tour is now in its second year.
Yeah,
but needless to say, those shows were amazing. So
yeah, well, play on, boys.
Yeah, keep going.
Go for it. Get it while it's
till the wheels fall off.
Good,
I guess.
Yeah. So we'll move on. I saw this happen. And this is exciting for Nashvillians that maybe want to travel across the pond. Is that Gibson Garage?
Oh, the new opening. London location.
Right.
Yeah.
So they opened that up, and so the big splash they made, speaking of headlines, is that they got Jimmy Page to be involved, not only in the event, but he's going to have, you know, signature guitars coming out. And I want to throw it to you guys.
I love what Gibson's doing. You know, I think they're a great part of our community. I do think that that's going to be the most expensive guitar that people never play.
Yeah. Really?
Because, God, yeah. they're so heavy, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so heavy, and they're cool.
Plus, how many more ways can you do a Les Paul at this point? Like,
yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, they've done, but, you know, that to say, also, I think Gibson, you know, they charge a premium price. However, they're making art in a sense, you know, like that stuff coming out of the Murphy Lab,
yeah,
their custom
Murphy
shop. It's like pretty phenomenal. You know, you got to admit that's great stuff. So
yeah, I've got a lot of guitars, but I've got a
you.
I've got a 2019 Les Paul, and then I've got a 52, a 54, a 56, and a 60 Junior.
Is that it? Was that all?
Yeah.
Don't you have the one with the bender in it? Because that's an older one.
Yeah, but that's a
like a newer,
that's
yeah.
a 90s.
Okay.
So it doesn't really count.
Gotcha.
Yet.
But my point is, my old stuff, the top shelf vintage guitar, you know, these
the
gold tops. Yeah, I can honestly say my 2019, man, if I love my old stuff and that's what I play, but my new guitar, in a blind taste test, if I put away the vibe and all my sentimentality, it is an equally great instrument.
Huh.
So, you know, that being said, I play my old stuff the most because that's, you know, I've had that stuff forever.
Cool
it's kind of,
yeah,
it's not even, and yeah, it just, it's almost like the analog amps. Even though you don't hear it, you feel it on some level. And maybe we're getting into the metaphysical right there. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's more spiritual. I don't know.
Now going to new gear, I saw PRS is unveiling a bunch of gear coming out. And one of the things I saw was basically their CE24 model, but in a satin finish. But I wanted to ask you, does a finish on a guitar matter to you when you're buying something new?
No, not at all.
Okay, so it doesn't play into like...
Not at all. And I love PRS doing stuff like that. Okay, for instance, talking about old
But also a $500 guitar, it's $499.
Right, which is incredible.
Okay, so on tour, I had my 58 Junior, which I no longer have. I traded my buddy for this Switchmaster, 54 Switchmaster. But I had my 58 Junior on tour, and I looked at it one day, and I saw all these dings that my tech had put on it. And I'm like, you know, I don't mind banging it up myself, but when other guys are banging it up, I don't really
you're
like it very much.
Yeah, you're paying that guy.
I'm like, you know, come on, man. Because if he'd practiced a little bit more, he could have been in front instead of teching, but he didn't. So maybe this is sort of a thing. But anyway, all that to say, I thought, okay, I've got to leave this at home. So I brought out my PRS SE1, which is just a junior.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, man, the front of the house could not tell the difference. And at the time, this was like a $300 guitar.
Yeah.
So I replaced a $10,000 guitar with a $300 guitar. And it was great. It was...
Did you ding that up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It There is, that one had the dew beat out of it. So yes, but I didn't care.
Yeah.
And it just got better. The more hits, the better.
What about you? Does finish matter to you?
Not especially, although I do love a satin finish because I feel like the neck feels a little bit better to me.
Oh yeah.
You know, I love, even if I have a guitar with a big old glossed up neck, I'm gonna sand that bitch down anyway. So like,
yeah,
I'm gonna make it satin myself anyway. One thing, you know, electrics, I don't think it matters hugely, but I think there's something to, for me, satin finish acoustics that I think they just, there's a little more presence. That could be me, but I think, you know, you put a heavy lacquer on wood. That,
oh yeah.
The sound is the wood moving.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I do love like, you know, the Larrivee guitars that are satin finished?
Yeah.
Man, I think they just right out of the gate sound pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it matters more maybe on an acoustic,
sure,
than an electric. Yeah. Moving down, we're entering the Ed Sheeran block, which you probably didn't see coming, but apparently this morning, literally, I think the Loudon got announced a few days ago, and it's officially out there for pre-sale or pre-order, but the Sheeran Signature Looper built by Headrush just got announced this morning.
Cool. Headrush.
Yeah, so Headrush
has
been
looper?
Doing some... Yeah, but it's like a looper first with some multi-effect stuff in it.
Gotcha.
Because like such a big part of his live set, which he toured the world recently and played Nissan by himself.
I
so,
know.
So, I mean, he needs a looper. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, if you're going to have a guy design a looper, he might be the one.
Yeah. I'd say he's a good candidate.
Yeah, he sold out Nissan and a looper and an acoustic.
So, Headrush is obviously known for, like, kind of modeling stuff.
Yeah.
This isn't amps or anything. It's just effects.
That, it says 159 effects on top of what would be included for the looper. The looper has five different modes: multi, sync, song, band, and freeze. So I imagine that's just like create your own.
Sure.
It has drum loops and a big display, 7-inch display, similar to their Headrush Prime.
To their pedal board thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for an acoustic guy, that tracks.
Yeah, it's pretty wild to think that, because then the Loudon, that is his signature, is a $6,000 acoustic, limited to 150 pieces. But yeah, the looper multi-effects unit is $1,400. So I feel like you get a lot more bang for your buck out of that multi-effects unit, looper.
Sure. I mean, it also saves you if you're like that guy and playing a bunch of fly dates, you don't want to bring a whole board, I guess, you know, if you are using effects.
You know who I think would be valuable for, and we did the rundown with him, is Mike Dawes.
Oh, yeah,
guy,
right.
Tours with like Tommy Emmanuel and sometimes.
Yeah, he's
God,
yeah.
I love Mike. He's such a cool dude.
He builds loops and does great song renditions, but he'd be a guy that I could see really get his hands on it.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And in fact, if you've not seen his rig rundown, it is the most impressive acoustic rig I've ever seen. Everything it's a perfect marriage of gear and artistic expression. He's really great.
Yeah.
And amazing tones, amazing tones.
That's where like something like technology and gear enhances someone's ability versus maybe clouding it or
Right. It's not a crutch. It's not a crutch. It's like, you know, it's an artist just putting more
colors
sure. on his palette.
And anytime an acoustic player is kind of broadening the horizons, I think it's awesome because you don't see a whole lot of innovation in the acoustic guitar world. It's kind of been the same thing for so long. Outfitter builds, sure.
Well, Billy Strings.
Billy, that's a different story altogether. But
he just sold out Bridgestone here in town, I think two or three nights in a row.
I think it was three nights, yeah.
That's unreal, man.
It's what a badass.
Just an acoustic guitar and selling out arenas, yeah. But any interest in a super duper looper?
Yeah, I mean, I love loopers.
You're a loop guy.
You
got a drum machine, so maybe this will be, replace all that.
Yes, I love loopers. I'm not particularly good at them, but I do love them. I think they're a wonderful tool.
Is it something you use to perform? Is it something you use to kind of work out the kinks and get creative?
I've used them to perform, I've used them,
I use them more as a writing tool.
Yeah, like I find,
In fact, you know, especially like if I am jamming and come up with a riff that I know I'm going to forget, I'll just go ahead and loop it, and then I can figure out a lead over top of it or whatever the case is, or make some sort of recording of it if I'm not already rolling. So right,
kind of like something like humming a melody into a phone.
Kinda, yeah. Because you know that's also a trick. You know, like when you're recording something like a riff, like oh this is cool, you come back to it 6 months later and you're like, how the fuck did I play that?
Yeah,
I don't even remember what key you were in, what guitar it was. Like I'm like, how did I? So. But yeah, loopers are handy. Loopers are a little bit of a trick because everyone is different.
Yes.
You know what I mean? KT Tungstall rundown, where she was using the old boomerang. She was even mentioning like this, like the boomerang specifically, where you have to almost learn where to hit the loop.
Right.
Because they're all a little bit different, and there's a tiny bit of latency.
She learned that language, and so she's sticking with it.
Yeah, exactly, because who would want to relearn it?
Right.
You know, I mean, and she's such a brilliant player and does it so well. It's, you know.
That comfort allows her to be more freeing in her performances.
Right. You know how much confidence she would lose, though, if you, last minute, threw her a different looper? She'd be like, oh, shit.
Oh,
I mean, because, like, people that use loopers, they're so tied to their looper. You know?
Well, it's the same thing with Dave Knutson and those DL4s. He admits in the rundown there's far superior delay options, but he's so intuitive. The DL4 is so intuitive to him at this point that he uses those.
It's funny. I find myself even, like, today, because the DL4 was one of the first pedals I got when I was a kid. So when I am looping, I almost always, like, subconsciously limit myself to, like, 16 seconds or whatever that thing did, which is wild. There's a new version of it now that's a much smaller form factor, and I think the looping capability is way, way better. I think it's like, you know, over a minute or something like that. So I probably need to get one and play with it.
Yeah. Well, moving into new music, again, we kind of got a deluge of announcements really recent to add it in, as, so might not be as prepared, but St. Vincent just released a new song this morning and announced an album coming out on, I want to say, April 26th, mom's birthday. Good job, Kepi.
Hey, Kepi.
Born Screaming is the album title, and the song that came out was Broken Man. It kind of reminds me of how you described Marcus King's latest single, where it's like slow, brooding, minimal instrumentation, but where it differs from that is about halfway through the song it takes off, and then, you know, Annie Clark gets her Music Man guitar and makes pyrotechnics with it. So it's cool. It kind of starts as a sleeper and ends up as a rager.
Yeah.
So that definitely check out that song for everyone that hasn't yet.
I love those kind of songs. It's super dynamic.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It comes out kind of like a crawler.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, you're sprinting.
Like Phil Collins did that for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see where she takes her music, because every time she almost reinvents herself through the guitar on her albums. Like, I love there's earlier work that I didn't connect with, but that last record, was it called? Daddy's Home, that record, I actually liked a lot. I got to the point where I listened so much on Spotify, I felt guilty and I bought it on vinyl.
Yeah.
It's the only record hers I have. It's not like someone I go through the whole catalog with and buy, like, religiously, like Jason Isbell. Like, she was that record connected, I bought it.
Boy, that AT&T outage the other day made me really second guess my reconsider my appreciation for physical media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, if I love a record, I'm going to spend the money and buy it, because what if the satellites just quit working, or AT&T went down for an afternoon, you can't listen to music. You know? Like, so that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Right.
Try not to go there.
Yeah.
Just ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Another one that you brought up, Perry, was Pelican, which is cool because they haven't come out with new music in 5 years.
It's been a while, yeah.
And this is the first time they've made new music with their original guitarist since 2012. Laurent, I want to say, is how you pronounce his first name. But he left the band, and then Dallas Thomas, who was a Nashville guy, had been playing him for, and he rejoined the band however long ago, and now they're finally come out new music with the original guitar player. This EP, I think it actually comes out tomorrow.
Actually tomorrow, Friday. Yeah.
Which is exciting, because they're one of my favorite post-rock bands.
I love Pelican.
Their last full-length album was with Dallas. It's called Forever Becoming. That record's really good. It's a front-to-backer, I like to call.
Dallas came from, you know, he lived here for a long time, and he came from a band called Ass Chapel, which was incredible, legendary Nashville metal band, you know, heavy band, so there's that.
Check that out.
Yeah, so the new Pelican, Lost Dog Street Band has a new video out tomorrow, which I'm really excited about, because I know that they have a record coming out soon. Also, Knock Loose has a record coming out, I think, on the 10th, and they just released a single with a video. Good God damn it, it's heavy. Oh, it's fucking heavy. I love it. Oh, I love it.
And like most of their tour, including the Nashville date on May 1st, which we'll either get a rig rundown or drum rundown or both, is sold out. Like most of their tour coming up is sold out.
It's wild. We did a rig rundown with Knock Loose at a venue here in Nashville called The End. If you've ever had the pleasure of going to The End or playing The End, it's maybe like 100 capacity. I mean, it's like a tiny
sticky floor.
Gross. They just about ripped the fucking roof off of that place then. But now they're playing like big old
marathon.
It's huge.
Imagine it's over 1,000 because it's general
1,500 probably. Yeah. So it's wild to see the trajectory of that band from just a couple years ago. We shoot the rig rundown in a tiny room, and now they're selling out, you know.
Yeah. The End is a dump.
For
sure. It's an armpit.
Yeah.
I love it.
Nothing against dumps.
Played there more times than I've seen my own dad.
Sorry, Bruce.
We love you, Bruce.
definitely need a tetanus shot either coming
yeah,
in.
Yeah, oh yeah. Right. You almost need a hazmat suit to take
but
a pee in there.
I'd like to get your opinion on this. Is that Drew Folk, who I'm not aware of, also goes by Wizard Blood, or WZRDBLD is his, you know, studio name. Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it. But he's worked with Motionless and White, who's featured on the new LP from Knock Loose.
Oh, yeah.
Papa Roach, Disturbed, A Day to Remember, Lil Wayne, and Ice Nine Kills. Does that scare you as a Knock Loose fan, or are you encouraged by what could be new?
Ooh.
Because that's a lot of mall metal there.
You can't make the same record for your whole career.
Oh.
Hey. Slayer. Unless
you're
you
AC/DC.
Are Bad Religion. Unless you were Slayer. Or Bruce Springsteen.
Or AC/DC.
Or AC/DC. Yeah, okay. So I'll give you that one. But, yeah, you know, they got to try some new stuff, I think. I mean, they've already proven that they can make some asses move. So let's see what else. I mean, you know, they're already what I consider, you know, as far as heavy music, pretty fucking dynamic considering. But, yeah, I don't know. I embrace the...
So you're encouraged by it rather than... A little apprehensive.
I might have been apprehensive if I hadn't heard the new track, which is freaking awesome. So they're doing something right. I'll let them keep doing it, you know.
Clear the pit. Here come the Jinkos. All right, we're going to end on this note, fellas. This is, I want to know where these stories are going to go, so I can't wait to throw it up to you guys. So there's a recent band, I think if I pronounce it right, is Lorona.
I think so.
I think so.
Nashville,
like Corona,
well, Murfreesboro band. Yeah.
Oh, so it's actually in Tennessee.
Oh, they're a Murfreesboro band.
Wow.
So this is a wild-ass story.
I'll let you take it over, but I want to get you guys to have your personal stories about any bandmates that were horrible. So you tell the story.
So in this particular instance, I'm not going to name any names because who knows what's going to come of this. I would imagine some sort of legal recourse.
I mean, the names are on the internet because took screenshots, but go for
it. And obviously, this shit is everywhere. It's been posted and reshared all over the place. But apparently, John, this kid... The singer of this band became very, very obsessed with his guitar player's girlfriend or something. So I guess the guy worked at a gym and had access to pre-workout. So he kept giving his buddy pre-workout, but was adding estrogen to the shit to try to get, to kind of take the manhood away from this guy and swoop in and steal his girlfriend, which is the most unhinged, crazy shit I've ever heard of.
Wow.
It is insane, but unfortunately for this poor guitar player, he was having all these medical issues from it and like dropping weight and having mental things because he's being, God knows how much fucking estrogen was being pumped into this.
And also, like, he's probably working out harder in his life. He's like, man, I keep getting like losing muscle mass. Like, what's going on?
But I can't stop crying.
Yeah, and I'm very, very emotional about the new Bridgerton.
Yeah.
But that is wild. If that was my bandmate, obviously he would no longer be my bandmate, but I'd probably be pressing some charges.
I mean, that thing on Amazon, which we both liked, The Six, I think it was called, that fake band that they had like a series around.
Loved
there
it.
Was some, you know, turmoil in that band, which was fake drama, but this is one for the books, that story.
That one takes a cake.
Yeah.
Now, anybody that's played in a band realizes that when you're in a band of four or five people, that is like having four or five girlfriends. Sometimes, you know what I mean? It can get hairy on tour, but I've never, this is
okay,
by
so
far
want,
the worst thing
I've
let's
ever Let's open it up. What's the worst bandmate story you've personally endured?
Well,
that you're willing to share.
Okay, well, first of all, I feel like, I make it a personal rule to never say anything bad about anybody, because I know I've got my stuff.
Sure.
I know, but I love that about you. I love you guys. Because I feel like, you know, I've got my stuff, and everybody has their stuff. But I do have a great story.
Okay.
A friend of mine, who's also a friend of Perry's, John Small. We knew him as a film producer. But
worked for 3 years.
Yeah. Prior to being a film producer, he was a great drummer in New York, and he and Billy Joel played in bands together before Billy Joel's Billy Joel. And then they were in a band called The Hassles that was, I think, on Columbia. And then he and Billy Joel were in a duo called Attila. It was just drums and Billy on B3.
Okay.
And then when Billy became Billy, he played drums with them for quite a while. And eventually John was in a motorcycle accident and became Billy's tour manager instead of drummer. Well, Billy ended up falling in love with John's wife.
Oh.
And John's wife divorced John and I think married Billy. And they were together for a long time. And I said, well, man, how'd that go? He said, you know, We were hippies. We didn't, you know. It stung a little bit, but we all loved each other, and it worked out. Yeah. I thought, boy, that is a next level
maturity.
Maturity.
That's some George Harrison energy.
That is some George Harrison energy. So it's amazing that
Fleetwood Mac his
exactly. Although they kind of hated each other,
but yeah. And they couldn't even say together.
George wrote a song about it and got over it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I always kind of marvel that you could have somebody, have your friend, your lifelong friend, end up with your wife when you're still married to her, and everybody kind of like, que sera. So, that's the closest I got to something
I've... What about you? No, you've toured like in small and big capacities, but a lot of your tours were vans.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
Done a lot
of vans.
That's
real cramped quarters for big personalities.
So let me start by saying anyone I've ever played in a band with, I genuinely love and appreciate. But I did, one of my bands had a fill-in bass player one time, and this fucking guy, oh my God, had nothing to do with his playing or anything. It was his driving.
Oh
my God. We got a van and a trailer, and it's fucking loaded, which is hard enough to drive as it is. And this dude would be like trying to steer with his knee, looking at his phone, to the point where we like had to stops him several times and pull over and be like, no, get in the fucking back, dude.
The keys.
I'm narcoleptic, so I'm not the first guy you want driving this fucking van in the first place, but it was still safer than this kid. He was just not paying attention in any way, shape, or form. And then he got really butthurt when we called him out about it. So, you know, the day we got home from tour, it's like, okay, you're gone, dude. Like,
especially because it's a fill-in.
Yeah, because it's a thing. Like, when you're on tour with somebody, especially in close quarters, it's not just about how you click as a musician. It's how you click as people, man. You got to eat with these people, sleep, you know.
The hang is more than half of it.
The hang is more than half of it. Yeah, and that's the thing that a lot of people, you know, if you're young and just getting started or just about to play your first tour, be cool.
Yeah, be
Don't
nice.
Don't be a dick.
Be nice.
That's it. Be kind. Treat people like you want to be treated.
Yeah.
And I'm a terrible driver. These guys hate my driving.
It works out because you hate our music.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of the hang, it's always great to hang with you guys, and I think that's part of the magic we somehow put together on camera is getting to hang and talk shit.
Sure.
So thank you guys, and thanks for your support. And I think we're actually starting to strip the audio and put it up on a podcast. So. If you can't stand us on YouTube, listen to your favorite podcast streaming and don't stand us, or can't stand us there either. Till next time, fellas. I'll see you again.
Later.
Later.